Japan for about 4 of those years. He then moved to California, studied music in Minnesota, and eventually moved to New York, where he now lives. He's played with many jazz greats, including Charlie Parker, Art Tatum, Ella Fitzgerald, Coleman Hawkins, the Benny Carter Orchestra, Duke Ellington Orchestra, Zoot Sims, Bill Evans. He's also appeared on a number of television shows, played in the pit bands for Broadway musicals, and this week he's playing in New York with Teddy Wilson at the Village Vanguard in New York. He's brought his bass with him and will be doing some playing for us a little later. By the way, his trip to Philadelphia was made possible in part with a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. Now, there's a concert coming up that I'll tell you about in just a couple of minutes, but first I just want to play for you an excerpt of his recorded work, and this is from an import album. The album is called Major Holly, Excuse Me, Ludwig, and that's the piece that we're going to hear, Excuse Me, Ludwig, and this is Major Holly on bass.
Thank you.
We heard Major Holly, my guest, on bass, with Gerald Wiggins at the piano, Oliver Jackson on drums, from one of Major Holly's albums. This is an imported label. It's called Black and Blue. It's a French label. And Major Holly, welcome to Fresh Air. It's really such a treat to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And I want to mention that there's a concert coming up this Sunday, which will feature Tommy Flanagan and Barry Harris, two great pianists.
From Detroit, you
mean. From Detroit, as is Major Holly, with Major Holly on bass. And this is a concert sponsored by the Wilbur Ware Institute at the Painted Bride Arts Center, Sunday evening with two shows at 7 and 9 o'clock. And the Bride is on 146 North Bread Street between 2nd and 3rd Streets in Philadelphia.
Unfortunately, I have to... I've sort of misunderstood my commitments. I had 3 to 7, and I may not be able to get here, but I have a very, very good standby just in the event I don't. Mr. Lyle Atkinson has consented to coming down and play for me in my stead, in the event I don't get here.
Okay, so...
There is a possibility, but at this point it's very remote because I can't get back to New York in time to finish my commitments with Teddy Wilson. That is after 9, unless I can find a way to get back very, very fast.
Right. Well, thanks for updating us on that, but the concert will take place as scheduled with Flanagan and Harris.
These two fellas they're homies, as we call them. Both I've had the pleasure of playing with them individually. Together, we did the Church of the Heavenly Rest with 4 piano players from Detroit not too long ago. Sir Roland Hanna, and Bess Bonnier. I don't know if you know Bess.
I don't.
But she's from Detroit. They're all studied together, Tommy and Barry, of course. And there is a cassette out and also the program was recorded for possible sale for the records to be released right later for that concert. Well, so you have 4 great pianists on there.
You grew up in Detroit. You know the other Detroit musicians like Barry Flanagan and Barry Harris and Tommy Flanagan?
They're a little younger than I am. You know, they grew up with my sister, more or less. I'm an old man. But I grew up with people like, I was in school with Lucky Thompson. He used to sit in front of me. And Bernard Green, I guess you you might know him. He's a conductor in Hollywood right now he was with Paramount, but that was with Paramount Pictures. Now they all mixed up there some kind of way because Fox and MGM, they don't have the same kind of music programs in Hollywood as they used to, individual studios, you know. But he was one of the geniuses in our class. And Sahakian, he's one of the great violinists. He's we were just surrounded by wonderful people at one time. Bobby Burns' father was the head of the music department there at that time.
You didn't start playing bass. You started with the violin,
I'm
right?
I'm a violin player.
How'd you make that transition?
Oh, well, it was sort of made for me, really. In 1942, I would rather say 43, because 42 I was busy trying to learn how to become a sailor. And
this was in the Navy.
Yeah, 1943 I was sent to Hampton Roads, Virginia, to learn about diesel engines, which I wanted to do. And unfortunately, they told me, said, well, you've had all this music education, so what are you doing here? I said, well, I made service school, you know. I wanted to become a motor mech, as they call it. He said, man, get yourself back to Great Lakes. And it was a terrible trip. The only food I had was with the Red Cross, donuts and coffee, which I don't even touch.
Day-old donuts, probably, whatever. Right?
When I got back to Great Lakes, I was told to go back to Barracks 1812, and that was where all the musicians were. And from that point on, I've been involved in music ever since.
Seems like a lot of jazz musicians were drafted during World War II, and
yes,
that really changed the whole jazz scene, didn't it?
Well, I don't know too much about everybody else, except when I got there, I was so open-mouthed with awe and amazement of my being accepted, just a high school musician, to be able to be involved with all these fellas who played with Duke and Count and Tiny Bradshaw and Lucky Miller. And I was just overwhelming.
How did you develop the technique that you've become known for, which is singing in octaves as you bow the bass?
Well, it's twofold. One is because of the violin, the strings are pitched in such a level. I was able to hear the violin to some degree at one time, but the bass at the time that I started to try to really learn how to play, I couldn't hear the lower sounds. And so I used to try to sing the octaves as the notes would come up in individual study. And, of course, I have a deep voice, and so it worked, started that way.
Could you play a little for us and show us how that sounds?
Well, sure. Well, this is a G. And with my voice, I can say ha, z, o, ya, like so. Saddling done stands for young, beetle, yolid, oh, oh. That's the low G.
Did you have to stretch your voice a lot to get that low?
No, no. It just goes down there. Oh, that's the lowest note on the instrument. So I get that now. But this is a little bitty baby bass, so I bought it because of the travel purposes, because, traveling in a car, they make cars now so that you can put nothing in them, hardly yourself.
Yeah, you don't want to break your bass. I know how dangerous it is to travel with a fine
instrument.
No,
this fits in the car very well.
So this might sound...
With the amplifier, this sounds just like the bass. Even without it, really, because it's got... And then with the bow. And with the voice. Stand up, 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 stand up. Amen. So that's what it is.
Is it difficult to get a nice tone or vibrato with the bow? Because I know, like violin, you really have to work up a technique to get it. Is it
the
hard?
The vibratos are very... Because of... Well, we're technical now, right? The violin strings vibrated some 800, some vibrations per whatever, or dBs or whatever. The bass, of course, that's why it's very unique when you sing with, I guess everybody sang in the bathtub or bathroom or in a small, when it sounds like you got a bucket over your head, that makes it, the voice sounds louder. The bass of the strings don't have so much of a vibrating sound. So the vibrations, and with the just a slight movement of the hand. Now that's a normal vibrato for that string. Then you could. Some of the kids now who are with the 2 and 3 fingers. You hear that a lot on these kids who play these, like Niels Pettersson and Cecil McBee and Eddie Gomez, even Red Mitchell. They've developed, even Rufus Reed, they've developed these. And so has Ron Carter. It's a very nice sound after you get it developed.
When you're singing as you bow, this may sound silly, but do you know what, like, syllables you're going to use to scat, or does that just happen?
Well, we'll put it this way. Williams and Marshall Williams College, Williams and, is it, but anyway, Franklin and Marshall, that's Franklin Marshall College, and they put in the newspaper that I was an X-rated bass player, which meant that I utter subtle profanities when I'm doing what I'm doing. So I don't know, because what improvisation is to me, as far as this is concerned, is I feel like I'm an orchestra, or I feel like a saxophone, I feel like a trombone, or whatever the occasion comes in my mind, because I don't know what I'm going to play. There's nothing fixed.
Well, that's one thing I've always wondered about, because now if you don't know what you're going to play, you have to know how it's going to sound, because after all, you're singing with it, right? So, I mean, you must hear it in your head, but I guess you don't know what you're going to hear. But you must hear it right before you play it, because you're singing it too.
Well, that's difficult to explain because of the... other words, what my mind is dictating it to do, my reflexes indicate to my fingers and my bow what I to follow that path. And we're getting really technical again, because the mind has to signal what I'm doing, because afraid sometimes to run out. I get out of what is called out of key sometimes, because I try for things that hardly. For an example, it's hard for me. See, I'm using my normal voice. Na 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 na. Then I have to go into a falsetto, or whatever up there, and so. So that's not the way I sound. But that's in order for me to get these things, I have to know what I'm going. I know it's up here somewhere. And usually I'm pretty well into tune with myself. It's dumb, but it's the only way I can explain it.
Slim Stewart also sings.
Very good friend of mine.
Was there ever any rivalry between you, since there's a similarity in your styles?
A very, very happy rivalry. Because we've always... I heard him actually, well before I thought I would ever play a bass. And I was wondering what that sound was. And I remember the record. It was called Champagne Lullaby. And I've asked him time and time again, how does Champagne Lullaby go and all that? He doesn't remember. And that's the first piece that I heard that he did. We were fortunate enough to make a record together with the same label. It's called Dumb Name, Two Big Mice. And there's a cassette around that I brought of that, but... I didn't bring the record. You'll have to write to France or something.
Right.
I can't get any distribution in this country for these records. I've never made any records in this country of my own. I don't think they call me a bass player here. They call me whatever. I have never made any records here. I made a lot of records with people, but never anything on my own name, that is.
But you'd like to.
Well, I would like to make a record with Slam Stewart, because we're both getting old, and he's a little bit older than I am. And what I'd like to do is to let this, let the people know, like I work with Benny Goodman a lot in the past, and people come to me and say, is he still around? And the same thing they ask me, when they hear me do this, it's a Slam Stewart. Whatever happened to him? And he's still playing. He comes to New York. He's being Vanguard in November. And so, that same kind of activity that used to be about reportage, what we talked about earlier, it seemed to have gone down a little bit as far as the jazz community is concerned. They don't seem to be in touch with everybody that's still around,
yeah.
Even the musicians, because when I go to Europe, I see people I haven't seen in years, or I haven't seen them since that whole year. I ask them, where you been? Who you been? And they've been working, but I never see them, or never even hear about them. They just don't seem to come to New York, or I don't seem to be in New York when they're there,
yeah.
Or whatever the case is.
You know, I wanted to ask you one other thing about your singing. You sing in octaves.
I try to sing the same notes.
Same notes. Well, say, could you do it in fourths or in thirds? You know, in an interval. Would you be able to think that way? Do you think?
Oh, you mean like? That's not very good, but that's about, which is a third, a tenth, and I could sing this one. Now that's a perfect fifth, it's supposed to be if it's in tune. La, now I'm singing the tenth. La, 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 la. Something like that.
A very different effect.
Yeah. Then you can do a lot of tricks. Those dumb things, you know. There's a record I'm on just with Bob James that I do this on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sign of the Times.
Well, let's listen to another album that you're prominently featured on. And the album's called Jiving with the Refugees from Hastings Street. And it features Tommy Flanagan. On piano, one of the people who will be coming in on Sunday. And I think Eddie Locke is the person who organized the session. Maybe before we hear Laughing in Rhythm, you could tell us how this whole album evolved.
Well, everybody is on that record except Dan Morgenstern, who is in charge of the whole historical jazz program at Rutgers University now, former editor of Downbeat. He consented to play the siren, which is we did one piece called Call the Police that was sung by Hot Lips Page many years ago.
I think Nat Cole recorded that
he
also.
He did. But the first was Hot Lips Page years ago. Now, what happens is that this Refugees from Hastings Street is the same street that Aretha Franklin's father had his church on. Also, that used to be the worst street in Detroit, Michigan. It's considered like walk down that street for two blocks, and if you make it, you're home free, because it was one of those streets that you might just end up dead real quick for no reason whatsoever. It was that bad, it's supposed to be. And it is considered so bad till they dug the street up. And it's true, it's not there anymore. They made it. It's now a high-rise district that, where it used to be $3 a week for rent, it's now $550 a month. You know, to live there. It's one of that kind of a complete change. When I was a kid, everybody talked about Hastings Street. So we all called ourselves, because we all did work on Hastings Street at one time. Even everybody on there except Dan Morgenstern, and he's not even from Detroit. That's why he put his name on the record. But Eddie Locke is from that area, and Oliver Jackson is from that area. Tommy is from the North Detroit, and I live in Northwest Detroit. I was on what is considered at that time the country. Out where I lived was where they used to grow chickens and raise hogs and stuff like that. It's a real country town. But I was still in Detroit.
Right.
They used to ask me when I go to school, how did you get to school? Stagecoach and all that business, you know.
Okay, well, let's hear Laughing in Rhythm from this album, Driving with the Refugees from Hastings Street.
Well, all these songs were what we grew up by and with, as far as our listening things, you know.
Okay, well, let's hear it. And my guest, Major Holly, is featured with Eddie Locke on vocals and, of course, on bass. ¶¶
Laughing in rhythm. Laughing in rhythm. Put a feather in your ear. It will tickle McFaulty, Rooney. Laughing in rhythm.
Was Laughing in Rhythm, and we heard my guest Major Holly on bass and vocals, along with Eddie Locke, also featured on vocals, from an album called Jivin' with the Refugees from Hastings Street. Major Holly is my guest, and I just want to mention a concert that's coming up this Sunday. And it's a concert that will feature two great pianists, Tommy Flanagan and Barry Harris. Major Holly was going to be there. There's a chance now that he won't be able to make it to the gig, but the concert will be held this Sunday at the Painted Bride Art Center on 146 North Bread Street between 2nd and 3rd Streets. And there will be two shows at 7 and 9 o'clock. Also featured will be Evelyn Sims with the Jimmy Golden Quartet. Well, you had said that that is an example of the kind of music that a lot of you in Detroit grew up with.
Right.
I've always wondered if novelty tunes, and I think we could call that a kind of novelty tune, if musicians really enjoy playing them or if they do it mostly as crowd pleasers.
Sure. I think if the humor was not included in music, it would be worth I don't think it would be worth playing because of the, there's enough seriousness in improvisation. That is, if you're a dedicated musician. Of course, most of it is created, sometimes written out, or it's created to be funny. But if you're doing it on an impromptu or improvisated idea, I think the humor is always welcome.
Is there a community of bass players? Milt Hinton was on the show a few months ago, and I got the impression from him that there's just a special thing between bass players since they know each other's playing.
Well, we all seem to... I think it's because we never get to hear each other play that much. For an example, I haven't heard Ron Carter in 7 or 8, 9, 10 months, maybe a whole year. I haven't heard Eddie Gomez. I haven't heard, I've never seen Niels Peterson, Sted Peterson in my life play in person. I never see Charlie Hayden, who are all very good bass players. I never, like for example, even Milt Hinton. If it wasn't for the Colorado Jazz Party or something like that, he's out in Midland right now. I think Midland, Texas. Along with Zoot Sims and a whole bunch of them, they're all out there playing, and I've been invited to go out there a couple of times, and I meet with West Coast musicians. We just don't, for an example, Monty Budwig, it's been 8 years since I've heard him play. I never heard Carson Smith until last year. So the community, it's a kind of a thing that... we know about each other, and when we meet each other, like for example, Al McKibben is my hometown as well, and he's been living in California. I see Ray Brown every now and then. I've heard him play not too long ago, so we have kind of a rapport, and when we get together, we just talk about things, you know, and it's no... rivalry, I don't think, because there's only more or less one or two bass players on the job at the same time anyway, and then after that, it's a singular involvement, you know.
Mm-hmm. You've played with many, many different people.
Yeah.
When you're going to play a gig or do a recording session with someone who you haven't played with before, what kinds of things do you need to talk with each other about before sitting down and playing?
Well, there's a record I just made not too long ago, I think in April, which has just been released. And I was the only one in the studio. It was just me. So I didn't have nobody to talk to. I did a thing with Bob James called A Sign of the Times. And it's out. It's not necessarily, hardcore jazz. It's kind of like a modern version of his kind of music, and they gave me the idea of what they wanted, and I was in there for 3 hours trying to create something that would fit this particular thing, and apparently it worked, so it's out. He sent me a copy of it, and they played it.
So was there already a track laid down, and you played with headphones?
That's right, exactly. And then Quincy Jones, I work with him a lot. I was just told to go into the vocalist booth with the bass And I had my headphones on, and I would did things with them. And other times, it's just been, and they had a whole band there, you know, with maybe 20, 15 pieces. Plus a lot of percussion and stuff, you know, so 20-piece band. And other times, I've been just a trio and quartet, duos, things like that, and we've...
I actually think it would be particularly hard to record jazz with headphones laying on a track on a tape that already has three tracks on it, because it seems to me chemistry is so much a part of the playing.
Well, it used to be that everybody, well, before they got tape, and I'm still belong to that old school, where we just make a record and try not to make any mistakes, because you'd have to scrub the whole thing. Now they got this sound on disc, which is the same thing as the old-fashioned one-microphone kind of deal with where the whole band was able to be heard. But now they've got it so with a great science that you can go right straight from the sound in the studio right to the disc, and it's already a master. And they've got all these little... red, green, and yellow lights, like in a traffic control, you know. And when it's red, you stop. It's yellow, get ready. Green, go, you know. So it's nothing new. It's just a little facade and a little more technicalities and things that was added. And so
maybe I'm old-fashioned. It sounds alienating to me.
Well... It does sound like that. I'm not saying it very enthusiastically, but it's not new to me, not really. Because when I recorded first, I didn't make any jazz records, and I made records with people like Rudy Vallee and Rose Murphy.
Rose Chichi Murphy,
yeah.
Right?
Well, we were in the studio, and that was just one microphone for me.
Yeah.
And you couldn't hardly hear the bass anyway. Back in those days, it was, it was her. It was her thing.
Right.
They didn't care nothing about me. I was just being in the back there someplace, you know. So, I'll say this, and I will say it. If it wasn't for the electric bass, I don't know what would happen to string bass players. Because now people are bass conscious.
Well, bass is mixed more prominently on records, too, whether it's a string bass
and
now
they've got
bass.
Technicality. They've got, I believe, the bass, string bass was the last instrument to be exploited properly in its, it's the last instrument to be exploited.
Yeah, I know. So there's a lot of recordings where you can feel the bass, but you don't really hear it.
For example, this concert for the Wilbur Ware Foundation that you... It's going to be this coming Sunday. Well, Wilbur Ware is a fine bassist, and he wasn't able to really get his ideas across exactly the way they were because of not the great things that they have now to record you properly. But what he laid down was cool enough for most of the bass players to understand, you know.
We have an album sitting on the turntable that you recorded with Clark Terry and Coleman Hawkins.
Mm.
And I'd like to play Just Squeeze Me from it. And I think you were telling me that this is the first time you recorded with horns, singing with bass.
Well, I used my voice and bass as part of the ensemble. In other words, I had instead of a rhythmic circumstance, I was part of the horn, ensemble horn. I was a horn for a change. That's what I said. It's, you want to listen to it?
Yeah, have you listened to this lately?
No.
Okay, well, let's give it a listen now. We're going to leave that in progress. That's Just Squeeze Me. And my guest, Major Holly, featured on bass along with Coleman Hawkins and Clark Terry. And he was explaining that that was the first time he played with the horns, and his voice and bass were used as part of the horn section with it.
Well, actually, I had the melody, really. And they played the obbligato, say, tenor and alto, or tenor and trumpet, but the alto part. Coleman was the high part in that one, so he would be considered the soprano.
Do you have a dream rhythm section, either one that you've played in or one that you would put together if you could?
A dream?
A dream rhythm section.
Well, I play with just about so many great people that it doesn't make any really difference. I like so many people. I got to play with, well, some of the people that have passed on, like Art Tatum, and I played one time with King Cole once. He was an excellent piano player. A lot of people just don't know anything about his playing so much. They think about his voice. He was an excellent pianist, and Art Tatum. I had the pleasure of playing with him, but all the things that I like to play with him, he would say, "I got it." And I'd have to put the bass down so he'd play it. And that used to make me mad. I was with Oscar Peterson first before Ray Brown, and we made a couple of albums. That was when I first started. And so I guess that didn't count. And he's a fine pianist. And, I like playing with Tommy. I like playing with Barry. Just about everybody.
And you're playing with Teddy Wilson now.
Right now I am. Well, last week I was with Marty Alexander. So I get around. And I'm looking forward to playing next week with a little girl by the name Valerie Capers. She's an excellent pianist.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to get going in a couple of minutes and join National Public Radio. But, you were at the Dick Gibson Jazz Party in Colorado, and he, I understand, is what, a millionaire or wealthy, maybe not a millionaire.
He introduced the water pick. Every time you wash your teeth, you give a couple of pennies to his fund, whatever that is.
What are those parties like? I've always wondered about
that. They're great. You're invited if you want to go.
I am?
Right now, yeah. Huh. Over there. I invite you.
Great.
Okay. That means what it is. It's an invitational party given usually at Labor Day weekend or during Labor Day. And I've been going since 1962. And people come from all over, and he invites, he started out with 9 musicians. Now it's around 60. And they come from everywhere, England, Canada, and all over the United States. And people come from everywhere.
Is he a musician, or does he just love to listen to
musicians? No,
he's
not a musician. He loves music, and he loves to produce these things. And now he's doing a monthly concert at the Paramount Theater in Denver. And I was on that. That's where I just came from.
Uh-huh. Well, so it sounded like a great
party
to me. And it's
a lot of fun. The people that don't come to the, or maybe can't afford to spend, because the Broadmoor is a very expensive place.
Mm-hmm.
So they can afford to come to the Paramount Theater. So sometimes they travel for hundreds of miles just to get there.
Yeah. Well, looks like we're really getting out of time. I want to thank
you so
much for coming to Fresh Air. It's really been so much fun to talk with you and to hear you play and to listen to some of your records. I really appreciate your coming. And I do want to mention that Major Holly's trip to Philadelphia was made possible in part with a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. And if you're going to New York in the next few days, he's playing at the Village Vanguard with Teddy Wilson. In Philadelphia, he was scheduled to appear at a concert this Sunday. It's a gig he may or may not be able to make, but other people who definitely will be there playing are pianist Tommy Flanagan and Barry Harris. Vernell Fournier will be the drummer. Also, Evelyn Sims will be singing with the Jimmy Golden Quartet, and that's this Sunday at 7 and 9 at the Painted Bright Arts Center at 146 North Bread Street. That's between 2nd and 3rd Streets, just south of Race. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you, and I might mention, if I'm not able to get here, Mr. Lyle Atkinson might step in for me. I hope so. here in Philadelphia.
Okay, well, let me just tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air. At 2 o'clock, we'll hear a National Press Club, tape delayed from Washington, D.C., with Attorney General William French Smith. Then at 3, we'll hear from two psychologists, Dr. Ed Peoples and actually Anthony Scocco, who's an authority on correctional systems in the United States. 3:30, Francis Davis and Interval, our review of new jazz releases. At 4 o'clock, Alice Neal will be with us, and she'll be discussing her portraits. One of her paintings is on exhibit now in the Realism Show at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. At 4:30, we'll hear from Barbara Garson, who will be in Philadelphia to speak at the Wooden Shoe tomorrow night. She's the author of a book called All the Live Long Day, The Meaning and Demeaning of Work. It's about alienation from assembly line-type jobs, so that's coming up tomorrow at about 4:30 on Fresh Air, so I hope you can join us then. Contributing to today's show was John Zwed. The technical director was Joyce Lieberman. Production assistant for the program is Maeve Magura, and the associate producer is Danny Miller. My name's Terry Grossman. I thank you for listening, and hope you have a great evening. This is WUHY-FM in Philadelphia, listener-supported public radio in the Delaware Valley. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg.
And I'm Ira Flato, with All Things Considered.
No end to the fact that the third world leaders, or most of them anyway, are sincere about using aid properly in order to become self-sufficient and self-reliant. But nobody wants to become a beggar. Nobody wants to continue to be a beggar.
Rich, poor, developed, developing, north, south, whatever the label, the fact is that some nations have more, sometimes much more, than other nations. And a goal of the International Economic Summit that opened in Mexico today is to get those nations talking with one another. Tonight on All Things Considered, some of the voices, including that of the president of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos.
President Reagan arrives in Mexico.
In the past, he said third world countries should imitate the U.S.
An historian says that advice is irrelevant.
Analysis of the administration's position on nuclear matters.
Kathy Bodine is arrested. She'd been a weather underground fugitive for years.
Keeping a journal.
A kind of therapy just might work.
Radiation treatment for arthritis.
Support in the House for tobacco farmers.
And useful tips for parents.
What to say that's guaranteed to drive your adolescent from the room.
On All Things Considered, first news from Richard Harris.
More proof today of what President Reagan and many economists are saying. We're in a recession. The nation's gross national product fell 0.6% in the third quarter of the year. That's less serious than expected, but it follows a 1.6% drop in the second quarter. Two consecutive declines is the standard definition of a recession. Assistant Commerce Secretary Robert Dieterich says the economic slowdown is a withdrawal symptom of the fight against inflation.
There's no quick fix. There's no magic wand to wave. But unless we address inflation head on, like the administration is doing, we are going to be doomed to eternally increasing inflation and higher interest rates.